alle gut verstanden, wie wichtig Mangrovenwälder sind, einerseits quasi im Speichern von CO2 und andererseits aber auch eben gerade, was die sozialen Aspekte der Klimakrise, Klimaveränderung für die Menschen bedeutet. Der nächste Gast oder nächste Sprecher schließt quasi den Kreis, den wir am Anfang geöffnet haben. Wir haben gesagt, wir beginnen mit der Wissenschaft, wir enden mit der Wissenschaft, zumindest was die Inputs betrifft. Timothy Lenton wird jetzt aus UK zugeschalten, hoffentlich. Die Olivia nickt, ja, er wird zugeschalten, sehr gut. Timothy Lenton ist Universitätsprofessor für Klimawandel- und Erdsystemwissenschaften an der Universität von Exeter. Und wenn man seinen Namen googelt, dann kommt das Schlagwort Tipping Points. Die Frau Professorin Kromp-Kolb hat ganz am Anfang schon von den Tipping Points gesprochen. Das sind jene Punkte, die das System ins Wanken oder in unvorhersehbare Richtung bringen können. Und nachdem er die Tipping Points erforscht hat, viel dazu geforscht hat, war es ihm zum Glück ein Bedürfnis, auch einen positiven Blick auf die Klimakrise zu werfen, zu sagen, was können wir machen, um das Ganze in die positive Richtung zu bringen, welche positiven Tipping Points gibt es, könnte es geben. Und wenn jetzt alles so läuft, wie wir geplant haben, ist Timothy Lenton gleich hier zu sehen. Ja. Bis dahin wiederhole ich nochmal den Aufruf, genau, da ist er schon. Wenn Sie Fragen haben, bitte notieren Sie sie, wir werden sie nachher bei der Podiumsdiskussion dann stellen und hoffentlich auch beantworten können. Aber jetzt, Timothy Lenton, the floor, the virtual floor is yours.
Dankeschön, guten Abend. Entschuldigung, I'm going to speak in English and I can't see any of you, but it's a pleasure to be here. I'll share my screen and you'll tell me if it isn't working. Yeah, so I just wanted to talk briefly about the need we have now to try and tip positive change to avoid what are otherwise some quite frightening risks from climate change tipping points. So I'm going to talk about the scary things first and then try and cheer you up with the opportunities we have to accelerate the change we need. So the world is full of complex systems, and sometimes those complex systems can have alternative states, and very occasionally you can tip a complex system from one state to another. A complex system could be society or the economy, or it might be a little bit of the climate. A much simpler system is like an ordinary chair, which as you lean back further, heads towards a tipping point where a little extra lean or an extra nudge will tip you back over into a different state, sprawled on your back on the floor. What we're watching here was just a simple model, which I was forcing slowly towards a tipping point. So this could be global warming forcing a part of the climate to lose stability. Or as we'll see later, it could be policy interventions and market forces driving a major sector of the economy towards a tipping point from one technology to another. But whenever you see a system like this hit a tipping point, it means that amplifying processes inside that system are taking over and propelling change in a way that I could stop forcing the system and I wouldn't be able to stop the system tipping from one state to another. So I've spent 15, 20 years mapping out the bad tipping points in the climate, and we recently provided an update on what those are. And now it needs two maps to show you all the different bits of the climate that are at risk of being tipped into a different state by global warming. Here we're looking at things that could be tipped by global warming that would have major impacts and would change really the climate for everybody in some sense. So we're already risking tipping the West Antarctic ice sheet and the Greenland ice sheet into irreversible collapse. And together they can raise the world's sea levels by more than 10 meters and redraw the coastlines of the world. I'll return in a minute to the possibility of tipping the great circulation, the overturning circulation of the Atlantic Ocean. But also we're already seeing the evidence that we're triggering the abrupt thawing of the great permafrost frozen soils of the north, which then releases carbon to the atmosphere that adds to global warming. Then there's a bunch of systems which we really care about because many people's livelihoods may depend on them, like the monsoon in West Africa and the Sahel, or the coral reefs in the tropics that 500 million people depend on for their livelihoods. And unfortunately, these are also systems at risk of being tipped by ongoing global warming. And we recently tried to summarize all the, 230 or so detailed studies that have been done on where are the tipping points of these different systems. We tried to summarize that in one complicated plot here. Each of the colored bars is one of the systems that we've just looked at. The ones on the first map are in bold font, and the ones on the second map are in just normal font. The red to yellow or yellow to red colors are expressing our uncertainty about where the tipping point lies on an axis of global warming here. And the current level of warming is there around 1.2 degrees centigrade. And where current policies are taking us worldwide is to about 2.6 or 2.7 degrees centigrade of warming. So this, if you're seeing my laser pointer, this dark line with the uncertainty range around it, the worrying result is if we were carrying on into that world later this century, I think if you count it up, we would put 13 of these major tipping points at risk, and we'd be fairly sure we'd crossed at least three of them. But unfortunately, even at 1.5 degrees C of global warming, which is coming very soon, perhaps temporarily next year with the El Nino event, we already think four systems may be likely to be tipped. So there may be some tipping point damages which we just have to adapt to because we can no longer avoid them. There are many others that we could still work hard to avoid by accelerating action to tackle the greenhouse gas emissions that cause climate change. And one of those key systems that we really don't want to tip is this Atlantic circulation. This kind of map with the arrows is just trying to show that we have scientific evidence that tipping points interact in a way in the climate where tipping one can make another more likely. So in simple terms, the Arctic is warming up about three or four times as fast as the global average temperature because a very white and reflective surface of sea ice is being replaced by a very dark ocean surface that absorbs a lot more sunlight. Arctic warming means also more snow and rainfall in the Arctic. That's fresh water coming out of the sky into the Atlantic Ocean in simple terms. It's also Arctic warming that's accelerating the melt of the Greenland ice sheet, which is also fresh water pouring into the North Atlantic. Fresh water pouring into the North Atlantic interferes with a process where surface waters of the Atlantic either side of Greenland get salty and dense enough and cold enough to sink to the bottom of the ocean. And by interfering with that process, which we scientists call deep convection, we're already seeing the evidence that we're slowing down this great Atlantic overturning, it's the Atlantic Ocean bringing heat from the Southern Hemisphere to the Northern Hemisphere, and it sets the position of rainfall all around the tropics. So as that thing slows down, Earth history teaches us that it disrupts the monsoons in the Amazon, in West Africa and India. And as you slow it down, you leave heat behind in the Southern Ocean, and it's the heating ocean that's the real risk to the Antarctic ice sheets. So in that way, bad tipping points can cascade, unfortunately, in the climate, and we really need to avoid that situation where we would lose control of climate change if we started triggering one tipping point to trigger another, like the dominoes falling. Well, this complicated plot is just to show you what would happen if we carried on under current policies to 2.5 degrees of warming, but we had this big tipping point in the Atlantic Ocean circulation on top of that. It would do some crazy things to the pattern of warming and cooling across the planet, but it would also profoundly dry out on the right-hand side a huge band of the tropics, including the whole Sahel region, Indian monsoon region, but also the Amazon and major crop growing regions, especially across Europe. So Europe, as you can probably see, is getting a mixture of colder and drier. And in the global picture, in this scenario, global warming plus tipping point, we're just looking here at what it would do to the viable area for growing these three major crops worldwide: wheat, maize, and rice. And purple are places where it's getting less viable to grow these major crops. Dark purple is becoming unviable to grow these major crops. Green is where it's getting better to grow them. It's a mixed picture for rice, but for wheat and maize, this would be a disastrous scenario because the reduction in the viable area for growing these crops worldwide more than halves due to a mixture of the bad effects of global warming and the bad effects of the tipping point on top of that. So that would be a food security crisis, which we definitely don't want to trigger, which is why I'm going to switch gear, having sort of shown you some of the scary climate tipping points, to switch gear to emphasize that that should be impetus enough to want to accelerate action to eliminate greenhouse gas emissions, which is also called decarbonizing the global economy. Unfortunately, we're doing that way too slowly at the moment. About 7 times too slowly by my calculation. So if we're going to achieve what we need to try to limit global warming as little above 1.5 degrees centigrade as possible, and certainly well below 2 degrees centigrade, we need a spectacular acceleration of action on all the sectors and behaviors and things we do that cause greenhouse gas emissions. And that's why a number of researchers, myself, Ilona Otto, Jonathan Donges, others, are arguing the only credible way to have that extreme acceleration of action is if we can find and trigger what I'm going to call positive tipping points that can metaphorically, like in the original movie I showed you, lower the hill here, shift the balance of feedbacks in a way that can create self-propelling change. That means perhaps getting rid of some of the damping feedbacks that maintain the fossil fuel burning state of quo, like status quo, like there are still trillions of dollars of fossil fuel subsidies being spent every year worldwide. But it also means working with reinforcing feedbacks that can propel change from one state of the economy to another. So I just want to show you that tipping point changes are already happening in parts of the economy. This is what's happened to the car market in the little country of Norway, which has been the first country in the world to tip more than 80% to full battery electric vehicles for personal transport, just in the space of roughly the last decade. An extraordinary acceleration of change and a complete transformation of an important sector, because worldwide, cars and road transport in total is responsible for some more than 10% of greenhouse gas emissions. This particular story in Norway, I don't have time to tell you why Norway first, but suffice to say that the fact that Norway is leading the world in the transition to electric vehicles has got a lot to do with these characters. If you're as old as I am, you'll recognize this is Morten Harket, the lead singer of the pop band a-ha. But this photograph is taken in 1989 when this group of environmentalists and social activists came up with a strategy and a series of policy demands to the Norwegian government to incentivize electric vehicles by waiving the import tax on electric vehicles, waiving the VAT on electric vehicles, trying to eliminate road tolls for electric vehicles in Norway, a list, in fact, of 9 different policy demands. And they used the fact that the media was following the pop band with them everywhere to shine attention on the potential for clean vehicles in Norway. So this red car here is a hobby converted electric, we would call it Fiat Panda, in the year 1989. And this group imported another vehicle just like it the year after into Norway, and slowly, over a process of 7 years, persuaded policymakers to adopt these incentives to encourage the electric vehicle transition. Now things have changed 20 years on, and the price and the quality of electric vehicles has improved to the point where the global electric vehicle fleet is now growing exponentially. It's the kind of stacked colored bars here. And And although Norway leads the way, everybody else is getting to the position where they can follow. And that's because of what these complicated dotted lines are showing. There's been a key development that the more batteries that got made, lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, but also for your mobile phone, for laptops, for all sorts of purposes, the more of those batteries that got made, the cheaper the next one got to make. That's what we call economies of scale and learning by doing, that the price of batteries has come down a factor of 10 roughly in the last decade. And that's what's been making electric vehicles both cost competitive, but also those batteries have improved so that the range of your average electric vehicle has gone up 3 times in about the last decade. So that puts us in a situation where, thanks to that really strong reinforcing feedback, the more batteries and electric vehicles we make, the cheaper the next one gets to make. That's brought us to a situation where if we learned the lessons from Norway and more major economies provide the right policies and incentives to consumers to start the transition to electric vehicles, then the transition is rapidly becoming self-propelling. And this matters for the reason I said, which is this can shut down more than 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. That in itself is important. If we can get a global tipping point going to electric vehicles, which don't have to be cars, they could be electric motorbikes in India or Africa. Certainly electric three-wheeler rickshaws in India are taking off rapidly. That's all important in and of itself, but also this tipping point can enable others. So by making batteries ever cheaper, this tipping point is opening up the opportunities to electrify other forms of transport, like goods transport. It's also the rapid transition to electric vehicles is stranding fossil fuel assets. And that means oil companies are being hopefully forced now to start thinking about reinventing themselves, because some of them are simply not going to have a market for the oil that they can extract at the price it costs them to extract it, because major market for oil is road transport, and we'll all have switched to electric vehicles. And that market could have tipped globally by 2030 or the early 2030s by our calculation. But it's also super important, ever cheaper batteries, because that could be a key enabler of an even bigger tipping point, which is the tipping point to renewable energy worldwide. Because in simple terms, if we want to head to a future of 100% renewable electricity, then we're going to need lots of cheap electricity storage in the grid. And that's because you'll appreciate that when you want to boil the kettle isn't always when the sun is shining or when the wind is blowing. So a renewables future has to be paired with electricity storage, and batteries is one of the really effective ways. Cheap batteries is an effective way to do that. Now, the really good news for power generation is that renewable sources of power, solar panels are shown here, but equally wind turbines, have been getting spectacularly cheaper over time. For solar panels, the economies of scale are phenomenal. From the decade between 2008 and 2018, there was a tenfold reduction in price shown here in a solar panel as the numbers of panels scaled up by orders of magnitude, and the price continues to decline, such that renewable power, whether from solar and also from wind, even combined with battery storage, is now the cheapest form of electricity generation in most of the world. And I'll just show that with some maps that go from 2020 to 2023 to future projections at the bottom, 2027 and 2030. The colors on the maps are the cheapest form of electricity generation, including the storage factor for solar and wind. In 2020, onshore wind power was cheapest electricity generation in much of the world. Japan was the only place really left with coal being the cheapest form. 2023, this year, Japan still has coal as the cheapest, but solar is becoming the cheapest option in much of the world, with wind hanging on in bits of Europe, like where we are in the UK. But as you go into the future, solar is declining in price faster than wind power. And if we forecast ahead, we robustly predict that it'll be the cheapest form of power generation in most of the world by the end of the decade. And it means cheaper electricity than we've ever had historically, possibly by up to a factor of four. And that's going to be an amazing, empowering revolution for the global south and for the many people who still don't have access to electricity, notably in sub-Saharan Africa. It'll radically improve the balance of trade of many developing countries, most of which are net oil and fossil fuel importers. Instead, they'll be able to generate power, electricity, and energy in country. And some of them are also starting to manufacture the electric vehicles, like electric motorbikes in Africa, to run on that electricity. So then they even further improve their development and balance of trade and economic growth. So I should finish up, but I just want to highlight that these, as I've shown you, these tipping points can interact, these positive tipping points, in a good way, where one positive tipping point in the economy, like renewable energy getting ever cheaper, really reinforces that another tipping point to electric mobility or electric transport, because it's making the cost of running electric mopeds, electric bikes, electric cars cheaper and cheaper. But as I showed you, the ever cheaper batteries that are being created as the car market tips is also reinforcing the transition to renewable energy. So there's possible cascades of tipping points in a good way across the global economy. And I won't try to give you all the detail of what we think these are and how we're mapping them out, but suffice to say, they're credibly there. And they, I think, are the last and best hope we have to accelerate the change we need to get on top of the climate crisis and avoid the worst of it, if you like. And on that note, I'll just leave you with this information that I've been leading a group of 200 researchers worldwide who are busy finalizing a big report on the bad and the good global tipping points that we're aiming to release in December, if you want to find out more. Thanks very much.